And so here it gets all really summed up. It's a narrow gate. He's saying, it's decision time. You've listened to me preach. You've listened to me share with you all of these things. And now it's decision time. As I wrap things up in the Sermon on the Mount, the question everything has been leading to is this: will you follow me? You know, when he invited his first disciples, he just walked up to them and said, hey, follow me. And they said, okay, and off they went. This is a bit more of an informed thing because they've been listening to Jesus and he's been pulling no punches. He's been sharing with them the reality of what's required. And now he asks them, will you follow? That's kind of the question that covers the conclusion of this sermon. And he's saying, don't answer too quickly that question. Don't just say, sure, of course we'll follow. Because he's already told us that following is going to cost something. He said earlier, way back in chapter 5 at verse 20, we read that weeks ago, he said, unless your righteousness exceeds, and righteousness being the way that you measure up to God, your rightness, your holiness before God, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. So the scribes and the Pharisees, you might remember, we talked about, they were the most righteous people that you could ever think of. And he's saying, you have to be even more righteous than them. And when they said, what does that mean? How do we be more righteous than them? He gave examples. He said, it's not enough simply not to murder people. That's a good start, but it's not enough. You also must not even be angry. You mustn't insult or mock people. Anybody who's done you wrong, you mustn't do that. Instead, you have to make it right when there's a conflict. You have to be reconciled to the person with whom you have a conflict. It's not enough to simply not cheat on your spouse, to not commit adultery. We must not even look at another person with lust as if they're an object. It's not enough to simply love our neighbors, our friends. We also must love our enemies. And so he says, knowing all of that, will you follow me? And so we can't forget what else Jesus said. He said that we're supposed to do all of the religious things that we do, things like giving alms or offerings and fasting and praying. We're supposed to do it all in secret so that it's between us and God alone. We're not alone. We're not supposed to be making a great big show of it. He said we're not supposed to store up treasures here on earth. He said we're not supposed to worry about things. He said we're supposed to seek first, before everything else, God's kingdom and God's righteousness, that those are the things we're supposed to be living for. He said we're not supposed to judge. We're supposed to look at ourselves before we ever look at anybody else. We're supposed to deal with our own sin before we ever look outward beyond ourselves. And so he says here, knowing all of that, will you follow? That's really the question of the entire Sermon on the Mount. Here in Matthew's gospel, it's right at the very beginning of Jesus' ministry, and the crowds are following him. They're all excited. He's healing people. He's casting out demons. This is all great. And so he kind of sits them down and says, here's the reality. It's hard. Will you follow, knowing everything I just said? Don't answer too quickly. I don't want you to answer without giving some thought to the cost of this. That's the caution of verses 13 and 14. Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide, and the road is easy that leads to destruction, and there are many who take it. For the gate is narrow, and the road is hard that leads to life, and there are few who find it. And I was thinking about that whole idea of the narrow gate. Do you remember when our subway stations had turnstiles you had to walk through? Do you know what I'm talking about? Those things that turn over? They were awful. And I'll tell you why I hated them. Because I tried to go through pulling my handy little thing. Have you ever tried to do that? Or like a suitcase or something behind you? There's only room for a person to go through. And so then you have to try, and if it's full, you have to try and lift it over the turnstile to get it to the other side, or you just get stuck. There's some great pictures online of, you know, the big turnstiles that were like big doors that you walk through, people getting their bikes completely stuck in those. It's a narrow gate. And it's so narrow, there's room for you, and there's not room to take anything else with us. And I thought that's a great illustration here, because when Jesus is saying, it's a narrow gate, enter through the narrow gate, we know that that means that there are certain things that we can't actually take with us through that. There are things that aren't going to fit through that gate, just like my trusty little wheelie thing here isn't going to fit through a subway turnstile. And there are two things in particular that we've learned that can't go through that gate with us. The one almost seems too obvious to name. We can't take the crowd. The crowd who's walking along on the big, big old open road over here, we can't take them with us. There's only room for one person at a time to go through the narrow gate, to go through the turnstile. And what that means is that, A, it's a decision that every individual person has to make for themselves. We don't just get swept along with our friends or our family or whoever who we're going on and we go. We all have to choose whether or not we're going to walk through that narrow gate. It also means when we leave behind the crowd, it's also kind of a metaphor for saying in all the ways of the crowd, all the ways of the world, all the values and ways of being and ways of behaving, all of the things that define who that crowd is who's walking along that wide, wide path, we have to also leave that behind because there's no room for it. Think about the values of the world, the things like, hey, sure, love your neighbor, love your friends, but it's okay to hate your enemies. It's okay to mock them, to call them names, to insult them, to get revenge on them if they've done something to you. That's all the stuff that we carry in our luggage that doesn't fit through that narrow gate with us. It means we can't take with us the idea of an eye for an eye, of hating our enemy, all the things that Jesus has talked about this far. We can't take with us all of our worry. We can't take with us all those treasures that we've been so intent on storing up here on earth. But it's not just the crowd that we have to leave behind. In a lot of ways, we also have to leave ourself, by which I mean our own ego, really. Listen to it this way. In Ephesians 4, in verses 22 to 24, Ephesians 4, the Apostle Paul wrote this: you were taught to put away your former way of life, your old self, corrupt and deluded by its lusts, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds, to clothe yourselves with the new self, created according to the likeness of God, in true righteousness and holiness. When I say that we need to leave our self behind when we walk through that narrow gate, that's what I'm talking about, our former way of life, our old self, all of the things that came before Jesus Christ was part of our lives, before the Holy Spirit was there to guide us and change us. Jesus said, enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the road is easy that leads to destruction. There are many who take it, for the gate is narrow and the road is hard that leads to life, and there are few who find it. You see, the thing is, once we get through that narrow gate, it's not like everything then wide open again and off we go along our merry way on another kind of yellow brick road. It's not that. The gate, the path on the other side of the gate is just as narrow as the gate itself. And so think about back in the Beatitudes, the very beginning of the Sermon on the Mount in chapter 5. One of the last Beatitudes there, verse 11, Jesus said, blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you on all my account. And notice that what he said there was, blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you on my account. That's the narrow path. He's not saying, hey, blessed are you if this happens to happen to you. That's too bad. But, you know, if it happens, you'll be blessed. No, blessed are you when it happens. That's the narrow path he's talking about. And it's not just that there's people that we need to be on guard against, people who will revile us, persecute us, utter all kinds of evil. In Ephesians chapter 6, a couple chapters after what I just read, in verse 11, this might be familiar to some of you who kind of grew up going to Sunday school, Paul writes, put on the whole armor of God, this armor that we need to be able to protect us, to be our refuge, to be our strength as we walk down that narrow path. Put on the whole armor of God. Why? So that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. It's not just other people. For our struggle is not against blood and flesh, but against rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers of this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. We don't talk about this part of our faith very much in our very traditional kind of Baptist church. But the reality is that there are forces in the spiritual realm that would see all that God loves destroyed. And that is also part of what makes this path so narrow, because it's not just other people who, and probably the other people who would persecute and revile us and all of those things that Jesus says, that's probably less than the spiritual attacks, the principalities and the powers. And I think the reason that we don't talk about them is because they become these dramatic big things that we see in movies and apocalyptic things and things like that. But in reality, the devil is subtle in the way that the devil works, and works through other people, works through our own minds, our own thinking, our own ways of being sometimes. And we can lose sight. But knowing all of this, not just that the gate is narrow, but the path beyond it is narrow as well, Jesus asks, will you follow? All these things that Jesus teaches, see, they aren't just a great philosophy for life. It's not just interesting reading and going, oh, this makes sense. This is a nice way to live. They're a call to action. There's always a call to do something, not just think about things or speak things. You're called to do something. Before us stand these two paths, this big, wide, open path and this narrow, difficult path that's even hard to get onto. And he's saying you have to choose one or the other. You have to walk a path. There's no such thing as just standing there, standing still. Life is a journey. So what path are you going to walk that on? Now, I don't think it's also a one-off kind of a choice either. I think that all along the path, this is where the metaphor, sometimes it gets stretched a little bit beyond usefulness, but imagine that there's all these doors along the path so that any time you can duck out and go to the other path. So maybe you're walking along on this wide open path, everybody's with you and go, oh, look at that door. Maybe I'll move over there. But just the same, you might be walking along on this narrow path, go, oh, I'm done. This is too tough. I'm going that way. Maybe you chose the narrow gate already. Maybe you chose that narrow path. You've been walking it for a long time. Maybe you're well acquainted with the hardship of that path, the challenges of walking that path, things like forgiving our enemies, reconciling with those who we have had conflict with. And sometimes maybe we're tempted to just choose another way. Sometimes I don't know about you, but sometimes it's like, I'm tired of being the one who's always having to forgive. God, make them be the forgiving ones. You know, make them be the ones who have to be people of peace and goodness. I want to be angry and throw a tantrum right now. I want to hit somebody right now. Maybe I'm alone in this, but sometimes we just get tired of the narrow way, of the Jesus way of things, because it's hard. And it's especially hard when we're not getting it back from the other way around. And so maybe we're tempted and we go, I need a little holiday from this path for a while. I'm going to pop out that door, walk down just where it's easier for a while. And maybe we find our way back and maybe we don't find our way back. Maybe we accidentally stumble through the door and one day we look around and we go, how did I get here? This isn't quite where I was expecting to be. Maybe you've been walking the narrow path for a long time. Maybe you've never stepped foot through that gate before. Sometimes we aren't paying attention. Sometimes we're just going along and when we stop looking where we're going, we find ourselves veering off the path. You know, one of the first lessons when you're learning to drive is you need to look ahead to where you're going. Don't look at the dashboard. Don't look at just the front hood of the car. You have to look down there to where you're going. I learned that when I was learning to drive. I learned that lesson really well when I got distracted by a snowbank on my driving practice one day. And that's where the car went, right smack into the snowbank. Because that's where I was looking. The same thing happens with where we're walking. What path are you on today? If you have to look inward, can you say, yep, I'm solidly still on that narrow path, that following Jesus path? Or, oh, I think I've drifted off. Or I intentionally said, I'm done. Or maybe you were over there and you haven't quite decided whether or not you want to come over to this side. I'm not doing a great sales job for the narrow path because it's it's hard. Jesus said, enter through the narrow gate. Make a choice. The gate is wide and the road is easy that leads to destruction. And there are many who take it. The gate is narrow and the road is hard that leads to life. And there are few who find it. Sometimes we think we're on the narrow path, but we're tricked. And we might have been tricked by other people, or we might have tricked ourselves. And that's what the next section of Jesus says here, starting at verse 15. He's talking about how we can be tricked into thinking that we're on the narrow path. And he starts by talking about people who might trick us. Oh, you're all good. It's all okay over here. No, there's no path over there. Ignore the man behind the curtain kind of thing over here. Just you're good where you are. It's in verses, starting at verse 15, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. I don't know if you grew up watching like Looney Tunes cartoons, and there were a bunch of shorts, Sam and Ralph were a sheepdog and a wolf, and they would clock in at the beginning of the day for their shift. The sheepdog had to guard the sheep, and the wolf had to keep trying to get them. And I looked for it. I couldn't find the actual short online. But there's one where what the wolf does is he dresses up like a sheep to go infiltrate the sheep and cart away. Now, he never, ever wins, and it's sad for him, but it's great for the sheep. And so that idea of a wolf in sheep's clothing is what he's talking about. He's talking about somebody who's able to completely mask their true intentions, mask their true identity, make us think that they're good, make us think that they are faithful, that they can be trusted, that they are leading us in the right direction. And so he says, well, how is it possible? How can we possibly know whether they're a false prophet or not? How can we know if they're leading us down the right path? He answers that, starting at verse 16. You will know them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorns or figs from thistles? In the same way, every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will know them by their fruits. It's not just what comes out of a person's mouth. It's how are they living their life. In Galatians 5, starting at verse 22, the Apostle Paul, he talks about something we call them the fruits of the Spirit. He says, these are the fruits of the Spirit. In other words, these are the good fruits of those who are following Jesus, of those who have allowed the Holy Spirit to take their lives. It's love, it's joy, it's peace, it's patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, the fruits of the Spirit. You will know them by their fruits. Are those things visible in a person's life? Are those the things that we see? Those are the good fruits. It's how we know if the one who's teaching us or leading us is on the narrow path. Now, the caution here is that sometimes bad fruit looks like good fruit. This is a great example. One of those is a bunch of blueberries, and the other is a bunch of something called deadly nightshade. If you accidentally pick the deadly nightshade and bake yourself a pie, you'll die. the name says it, it's deadly. And yet you look at them, and they look so similar, don't they? Sometimes the bad fruit looks like the good fruit. But if you stick around long enough, it will show itself for what it is. It'll show itself in truth, because the bad fruit can only mimic the good for so long. It's not just that other people might trick us into thinking we're on the narrow path. Sometimes, maybe even more often, we're really good at tricking ourselves. We are masters of self-deception. When Jesus spoke in verse 21, this is what he said: "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name?' Then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Go away from me, you who behave lawlessly.'" See, it's not enough just to say, "Yep, Jesus, I acknowledge that you are Lord. I acknowledge even that you are the Son of God. I acknowledge that you died for our sins." That's all great to say, but it's not enough. Those are just words. There's no action attached to those. Alone, those words are insufficient. Alone, those words aren't the gate. It's not like those are a password we speak and then suddenly the turnstile opens so that we can walk right through. We have to act. We have to make a choice to actually step through that gate. We actually have to do the will of God, not just say, "Jesus is Lord." We actually have to live as if he's the Lord and the master of our lives. We sometimes forget what the will of God is. In verse 22, "On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name?' Then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Go away, you who behave lawlessly.'" It reminds me of, again, the Apostle Paul, this time in 1 Corinthians, in chapter 13. And this is a familiar passage probably to many of you. It used to all the time be read at weddings. "If I speak in the tongues of humans and of angels, but do not have love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I'm nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing." See, the narrow path isn't about the flashy miracles. It's not about the healing and the casting out the demons and the speaking in tongues and the prophesying and all those big flashy things. When we're trying to discern whether or not we're on the narrow path, those things aren't the evidence. The evidence is the fruit of the Spirit. Those are the things that we look for: the love, the joy, the peace, the patience, the kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Those are the fruits. Those are the testament of saying that we are on the narrow path. And we can fool ourselves thinking, "Well, how else am I talking in tongues? Or how else am I prophesying? Or how else is that person over there healing people? They must be linked to Jesus. They must be on the right path. I can listen to them. I can trust them." And Jesus says there are so many who will say, "Lord, Lord," and I'll say, "I didn't know you." You'll know them by their fruit. We look for those who are giving their alms in secret, those who are praying quietly, not for show, those who are fasting without letting the world know that's what they're doing. We're looking for those who are actively loving God and loving other people, loving their neighbors and also their enemies. That's the way of the narrow path. That's the way of Jesus. That's the question he's asking us: will you follow? And then we get to his final words on the matter in verses 24 to 27. This is what Jesus says: "Everyone then who hears these words of mine," all these words that he's just spoken all through the Sermon on the Mount, "everyone who hears those words and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on a rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall because it had been founded on a rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine that I've just told you all from all through the sermon and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on sand. And when the rains fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against the house, it fell, and great was its fall." When we enter that narrow gate, when we choose the narrow path, we're with Jesus on that path. And when we're with Jesus, there's no hardship that comes our way that can knock us down. That's really the big difference between the two paths that we have before them. Jesus walks with us on one. There's this story in Matthew 8, just one chapter past what we've been reading, and it's a time when Jesus was in a boat with his disciples, and they were on the Sea of Galilee, and a great big storm suddenly rose up, as it does on that sea. And Jesus was sleeping somewhere on the boat. He was fast asleep, and the disciples were terrified because the storm was threatening to capsize them. They were all facing their own death imminently. They were going to drown. And so they panic and they wake him up, and Jesus says to them, "Why are you so afraid?" And then he rebuked the winds and the seas, and everything was calm. See, when we're with Jesus, it doesn't mean that the winds and the rains aren't going to come. It doesn't mean that the storms aren't going to come. It doesn't mean that the persecution and the reviling and the attacks from the devil himself aren't going to come. But none of that, when we are with Jesus, has the power to destroy us. That's why he says one of these paths is the way of life and one of these paths is the way of destruction, because Jesus himself walks the narrow path with us. Even though the other path might seem so much easier, even though it probably costs us way less, we aren't with Jesus on that path. And if we aren't with Jesus, we will eventually lose our footing when things get difficult. That's what Jesus meant. For the gate is wide and the road is easy that leads to destruction. For the gate is narrow and the road is hard that leads to life, because Jesus is on that road. And so knowing all of that, which path do you choose? Will you follow Jesus? Will you choose that hard way? Will you willingly leave behind the ways of the world? Will you willingly leave behind your very self? Will you follow Jesus through the narrow gate and along that narrow path? Jesus paid a huge price to open that gate for us. He paid with his blood. He paid with his life. In Luke 14, at verse 27, we read that Jesus said, "Whoever does not carry the cross," that's the hardship of walking that narrow path, "whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, doesn't first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it?" There's a cost to following Jesus. There are things that we can't take through to that path with us. It's not a decision to be made lightly. I also don't think it's a decision we make just once and then we're good. However long you've been on whatever path you're on, today is a day to consider, is the cost worth it to be on that path with Jesus? Knowing that cost, knowing that includes carrying a cross even, will you follow?